is an 8-iron, and it's a dead shank.
Wow.
Way right.
Oh, takes a shank. Hop off the path.
You gotta be kidding me.
Very tough pitch shot right here. You gotta hit it into the hill. One hop up and bite, and it's in.
Kind of like that!
Hey, this is Jay from Sub 70. I just wanted to give a quick little intro here. This will be episode 2 or part 2 of our interview with PGA champion Sean McKeel. A very interesting conversation regarding his PGA championship win, his career following that. He had some battles with injuries and some other stuff going on in his life that had an impact on his professional golfing career, and he was very honest and forthright about those issues and kind of reflects on those and also talks a little bit about what he's hoping to accomplish in the future, whether it's on the web tour, the PGA tour, or the Champions Tour. So we'd like to thank Sean again. There's also some sort of more lighthearted conversation regarding his thoughts and recollections of some other guys that he played with on the tour. So check it out. Follow us on social media at GolfSub70, and here's the rest of the interview.
I mean, this is like a huge moment. Not only did you hit, you know, one of the greatest shots in major championship history, so now you have your first win on the PGA Tour. You're going to be a major champion, and you, like I said, hit a shot that 50 years, 100 years now, people still remember that 7-iron shot. So how long does that take once it's sort of over to realize what you've accomplished, what you've done, and on multiple levels, you're a part of history?
Yeah, when I walked up and I was thinking about it, I was just kind of walking on the side of the green because Chad still had a good opportunity to finish solo second. I thought, to be honest, I thought, well, I finally won my first PGA Tour event. And it wasn't until a few minutes later that I realized that PGA Tour event was a major championship. So that's the first thing I thought of, was getting my first win. And I don't know, I didn't think too much about really about the shot. I mean, I kind of got up, but I did see when I was standing off to the side, my wife was wearing a bright pink blouse the entire day. And that was something that I kind of found her probably every hole during the day. I mean, I made it a point to, when things were going rough or if I was getting a little bit out of rhythm or whatever, I was going to look for her walking with that pink blouse. And I pretty much saw it all day. And that was really when I could see her over there. And I've known Stephanie. I'm 49. I've known Stephanie since I was 13 years old. So we've known each other a long time. And she's been as supportive of me. You know, even in my junior golf day, she didn't know a whole lot about golf, but she would watch me play some. And so she had been a part of all of the struggles from 1994, 1996, 97, I mean, 2000. I mean, she had been a part of all of it. And I think for both of us to kind of still be supporting one another and encouraging each other, you know, I just couldn't, I mean, she was emotional. I started getting emotional. And I mean, it was, to have her there and was a moment that I will never forget.
So now that you're a major champion and you're going into the 2004 season, I'm assuming life changes pretty dramatically. Is there a lot of pressure to keep up that level of play, or are you comfortable enough just to play your game at that point? You had a really solid year, but what's that pressure like that now you've really stepped it up to the next level?
Well, it changed for me the next week. You know, I had not planned. Back in the day, the World Series of Golf at Firestone was the week after the PGA. And so I hadn't planned on being there. And I was using Glenn Day had a partnership with a bunch of guys and had a few airplanes, and I was flying one of them. And so I had the pilot bring the plane up, and I promptly got on the plane to go home. And I flew home, and I'm in the World Series, and so I got to do some laundry and get packed up, you know, get packed up and get back up to Firestone. And once I got there, I was out with my manager at a restaurant, and I realized just how my life had changed. People were coming up to me at dinner, and there was a lot of interest in me, there's a lot of interest in, you know, my 7-iron. There's a lot of interest in what it's like to win. You know, it was just literally 2 days before. And so I realized pretty soon on that I was in big trouble. As I've alluded to today, I pretty much in kind of an introvert, and I wasn't real comfortable with kind of being the spotlight. I mean, I'm the guy that when you walk into a party, if I see you, you and I are good friends, I'm going to walk right to you. I'm not going to mill around. And it's just my personality. I really wish it wasn't like that, but it's just the way it is. And I recognize that, but I also recognize that I was in for a, I wouldn't say a rude awakening, but it just was, I knew how tough it was going to be. And I was really happy. And I thought about this later, that it was the last major because the year was just about over. And I could pretty much go back and just stay in my house and never come out for a while. But yeah, I just, I had a tough time. I Jeff Sluman and Bob Sway both told me at some point after, that August weekend that, hey, enjoy your year, you know, work hard, but really enjoy this year of being a PGA champion. I mean, there were a lot of new things. I'd gotten invited to play in Tiger's tournament at Sherwood. I'd qualified for my first Masters. I had a 5-year exemption. So there were a lot of things that I was trying to work my way through. And practicing hard and trying to maintain that level that I had that week took precedence over everything else. I got home and I quit playing golf with my friends. I quit playing golf with my dad. I spent all of my time at Ridgeway trying to perfect, you know, my golf swing. And, I got out there and like I said, I didn't feel that so much in 2004. I mean, I was still enjoying, I was busy. I was playing a lot of tournaments. There wasn't a whole lot of downtime, which I felt like at the time was a good thing for me. I just need to kind of keep playing, keep that level of play up, you know, not take any time off for fear of maybe, you know, losing the feel of the short game or whatever. And so I didn't feel a whole lot of that. And I had a pretty good 2004, only one top 10. I think I finished 9th at the Players Championship, but a lot of cuts made. And people, I think they kind of gave me a free pass. They gave me that pass the first year. And I was disappointed to not have made the Ryder Cup in 2004. You know, the Ryder Cup was always in odd years. And the unfortunate incident, you know, the terrorist attacks of 2001, you know, changed the Ryder Cup to even years. And so I didn't play really well enough. I only had one top 10, so I didn't really earn any points to get on the team. So I was a little bit disappointed at the end of that year, but I was still kind of working hard. But, you know, that November of 2003, my son was born. And, you know, talk about changing your life. I mean, certainly golf changed my professional life, but having a son and trying to be a new father and trying to balance being a husband, a new father, and a major champion, it was overwhelming. And I don't think I handled that very well. And my wife, who's an attorney, was traveling with me and Dade. And it was tough because, you know, we travel and he needed to be fed. He was up at 12 o'clock, 1 o'clock, 3 o'clock, whatever. There was just a lot of times that, you know, he would wake up and I would wake up, and it was tough. And I was trying to manage all of that, and it just proved to be, you know, almost too difficult. And then my play started to kind of fall apart. I wasn't feeling really well. I just felt like I just didn't have any energy. I had no desire to play. I didn't know, which was hard to believe. I mean, how do you, a year and a half prior, I was on cloud 9 and celebrating my first win. And here I am not wanting to play golf literally a year and a half later. So I was trying to work my way through all of that. And it was just a tough time. And, I just didn't handle it very well. But I mean, those are life things that happen to you, and you got to be able to you got to be able to perform. And then I started seeing a lot of the negative things that were being written. And I mean, it hurt, I think, for a while that I was managing and juggling all these balls. And that just made me stay on the range longer. And one of the best pieces of advice I ever got from my college coach was to stay off the range. I had certain things that I was doing with him. And there are times to go to the range, but I found myself just living on the range. As I said earlier, I gave up playing with my friends. I gave up playing with my dad and his group, all the guys that I played with since I was a little kid. because I needed to sit on the back of the range and trying to be perfect, and it ruined me. And I ended up getting hurt because of it. So a lot of regrets I have. And but there's been so many great things that have happened to me because of the PGA that yeah, I'm very grateful for all that I've, you know, been able to accomplish.
This kind of leads into my next, I'll kind of make it a two-part question. Now you get to play in the other majors, so I'm not even going to ask you what your favorite major is, because I think I know that's the guess of the PGA, on the other three, what major other than the PGA fit your eye the best? What did you enjoy most about those tournaments, or which one was your favorite? And then talking about your play, you know, 05 wasn't your best year, so this is my second part question, but in 2006 you came back really, really strong. So what was the change that happened in 06? And then now that you're in the major championships, you know, what was your view of the other three, and how did they fit your game? And did you think at one of them you could really compete and potentially get your second?
Well, I mean, look, I was obviously excited to be able to play in the Masters. You know, my dad had opportunities to go to the Masters, and he always told his friends that he wasn't going to go until I qualified. He said the first time that he wanted to go to the Masters was when I was playing. And funny enough, the year before, I said, Dad, just go. And he finally went in 2003, I guess he went to the Masters with his friends. And so I was very much looking forward to that. Chad Campbell and I flew up after the Players' Championship in 04. We flew up that night, Sunday night, to go play. And we played that Monday with Jeff Knox, who's, you know, obviously a kind of a famous golfer in his own right, because he's always the marker for players when there's an odd number of guys that make it.
Absolutely right. You have to see who he beats every time. I mean, I think he beat Bubba that one year,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, exactly. I'm sure there's betting lines on him now in Vegas. I'm sure you can find it. But so we played, and it was my first trip around Augusta National, and I loved it. And to make it even sweeter, I was with Golden Bear Sports Management for a couple of years, and I've known Gary Nicklaus since college, even though he was at Ohio State. And I got a call from a good friend of Mr. Nicklaus's, and he said, Jack would like to play with you in a practice round for your first, you know, Monday or Tuesday. And I mean, I was elated. I didn't know what to say. Even as a 34, I guess I was 35 at the time. I was like, I felt like a little kid. And so that was really a huge highlight. Didn't know much about the Masters. Of course, the golf course had changed. I didn't get to play the golf with, I would say, the easy Masters. I mean, you know, where the holes were, you know, 7 was different, you know, 11. They had put in a lot of trees. They'd added a lot of length to the golf course. So my first year, you know, for seeing Augusta National was really new for everyone. And just a lot of cool things that happened there. I got paired with, it was me and Jay Haas and Colin Montgomery, got paired behind Arnold Palmer in his last Masters. So here I am in my first Masters playing behind Arnold Palmer in his last Masters. And I made the cut. I think I had 8 or 9 three putts. I finished 22nd or 23rd and felt pretty good about it. I was very disappointed to not have played better just with all the mistakes that I made. But the other major championship I always wanted to play was the Open Championship, the British Open, as many know it. Troon was the first year, and I took my wife and I had a pretty decent tournament till the last day. My good buddy Todd Hamilton won, but you know, the U.S. Open I'd played in before and loved. What I loved about the U.S. Open was just the different courses that they played, the different setups. You know, the tree line, the heavy rough. The historical venues that they always chose. I mean, that's what I really loved about the U.S. Open. I mean, it had a kind of a mystique, whereas the Masters was, you know, obviously very historical, but no rough, undulating greens. It just, and each of the courses in each of the major championships were different. But I loved them all, and I enjoyed, you know, competing with the best players on the toughest golf courses. To a degree, I mean, I had some success. I think I made all the cuts in 04, you know, and typically, like I said, it's not something that you would expect a major champion to be thinking of. Oh, I'm happy that I made the cut. I mean, I realized it didn't take me long to figure out that I wasn't going to be you know, a number one player in the world. I mean, I think the highest I ever got was maybe 30, 31, something like that. I knew that. And so I was certainly taking my time to enjoy the opportunities and those types of things. But I was still out there trying to compete and win. And then in 05, it just kind of fell apart. And then back to 06, I got a new teacher in 2005. And I just felt like, not that my coach in college, and we were still working together, but I was traveling so much and playing so much, and Sam was still coaching, that it was just difficult for me to try to get any type of consistency, I feel like, just over the phone. And so I hired Matt Killen, and Matt teaches JB and Justin Thomas and Bud Colley now. He's got a really good stable of players. And Matt and I just worked on a couple things. I mean, I worked with him at the back of the range at Southwind here in Memphis for, I mean, a long time. And we had to straighten out a few things. And that kind of got my game back in 2006. And I got my energy back and my desire and everything else. You know, so I was back to enjoying the game again.
Then through 07, 09, once again, not the results you're looking for, but then in 2010, huge bounce back season again, over $1 million in earnings. What was that turning point in 2010 to sort of get the ship going the right direction?
Well, if I can't step back a little bit, in 2007, I was playing and playing, you know, not so great golf. And I did something, and I wasn't sure what I did, you know, to my shoulder. My left shoulder was kind of making a lot of noises, and it was sore and stiff and everything else. And I thought, oh, well, I'm just overdoing it. No big deal. And I kept playing, and I went towards the end of the year, I went and had an X-ray done, didn't get an MRI done, had an X-ray done, didn't show anything. So I kept playing. And Matt asked me in 2008 at Arnold Palmer's room at Bay Hill, he said, did you change your swing? And I'm like, what are you talking about? Because it was a lot lower. My swing just looked a lot lower. And when you put it on video from where it was a year before, it was totally different. I said, well, I don't know. I kind of did something to my shoulder. Well, anyway, I finally play, and I keep playing and keep grinding it out. It's the last year of my exemption in 08. And I'm like, what am I going to do? And I finally had an MRI done. Zach Johnson and I were playing together in Charlotte, and he'd asked me, Boo Weekly had asked me before. They kept hearing this popping noise in my swing, and I told him, I said, well, it's my left shoulder. And there was an orthopedic rep that was following Zach, and he could hear it outside the ropes. And he's like, you need to go have an MRI. So I went and had an MRI done on Monday of the Players Championship of 2008. And it showed a slap four tear, which is a tear of the labrum and the bicep tendon. And I took it into the fitness truck. And Dr. Job, I guess he's the one that perfected the Tommy John surgery, looked at the MRI. And he said, Sean, I don't do surgery anymore, but my good friend does. And it was Dr. Jim Andrews, the famous surgeon. And, but it definitely required surgery. So that was kind of how my 08, I mean, I played 07 hurt. And finally in 08, I realized I just couldn't play anymore. And, so that was kind of I would say now that was almost the beginning of the end. I mean, I was 39 years old when I had surgery. I was out 10 months. I probably should have stayed out a year and a half. I wasn't ready to come back. But once I was able to resume all full, you know, my practice, I rushed it. And finally I came back. And like I said, in 2010, I had a pretty good season. And, you know, my mom at Hilton Head of 2009, I'd just made a birdie in the last hole, in the ninth hole. And I'd gotten a call from my sister, and my sister had told me that my mom was sick, that our mom was sick. And I don't know, there's not a lot of people know. My mom had, she had battled mental illness her entire life. And ultimately, I mean, she was diagnosed with like schizoid affective disorder. So as a young person, you know, 9, 10 years of age, I kind of was faced with that, you know. And so I dealt with that with her and tried to help her my entire life. And my sister said, no, it's not that. Mom has a spot in her lung. And turned out that my mom had lung cancer. And that was April of 2009. And my mom passed away on October 21st of 2010. So, it just was devastating to me. I played all of 2010 with her in the front of my mind, and you know, all of the changes. It was certainly new to me and my family. It was just a very difficult time. And when she died, obviously a part of me went with her, and I just didn't have it for 2011. I kind of resigned myself to the fact that I'm in my 40s and nobody plays well in their 40s, or very few people do. And I think that was just the crappy attitude that I had, and it showed.
Well, then also looking at, I mean, you also had a health scare at, relatively speaking, young age at 45, almost the same age I am. In 2014, yeah. You had to have heart surgery. So that must be some, I mean, that's got to be a scary situation for you and your family to go through as well.
Yeah, I was working out with a karate master, and anyway, really, really good guy. He used to be Elvis Presley's bodyguard, but anyway, we were just doing through a warm up, and I just felt sick. I couldn't catch my breath, and I had to stop. And of course, wasn't real proud of my poor effort, because you know this guy, what he's been able to accomplish in his sport. And I told him, I said, Patrick, I just don't think I can make it. And I went to the locker room and sat down. And he said, don't worry about it. Let's come back and do it another time. I thought maybe I was just getting a cold or something like that. But it happened again. And then it happened a couple other times. And I went to the doctor and I performed all these tests, you know, heart ultrasound. I'd done the stress test. I'd done, you know, all the things that you would think of. And they didn't find anything. My resting heart rate was 60 or 61. They didn't find anything. And I went into a basketball game. I was going to the FedEx Forum with my wife, and we were walking. It was really, really cold. And, you know, I had to walk a few hundred yards to get into the arena. And I got there, and I got inside, and I told my wife, I said, Stephanie, my neck is hurting. I said, if I die, tell whoever that my neck was hurting right here. And I pointed where my carotid artery was. And she kind of laughed and smirked. She says, what does that matter? You'll be dead anyway. So I was like, yeah, what a compassionate wife I have.
Good sense of humor under pressure, I guess. Yeah.
Right. So I went in and I got warmed up, and it went away. And I went back and I got back outside, and I didn't really feel it. We just kind of walked slow getting back to the car. But I finally called my doctor, and I said, there's something going on. This is what's happened to me. And he called me up and he said, okay, I got you in for this test. And I went in and I had a heart CT with the contrast. And prior to going in there, one of the nurses asked me, she said, well, in order for me to do this test, your heart rate has to be, I think it was under 62 or 61, your resting heart rate. Otherwise, I'm going to have to give you like a beta blocker. And which obviously I was like, well, crap, I know that's a banned substance on the PJ Tour anti-doping list. So hope I don't have to do that. So anyway, my resting heart rate was like 60. And she asked me, why are you in here? I said, I don't know. My doctor just said you need to come. So I'm getting a little long-winded with this story, so my apologies. But in the end, I got home from this test, and not even 2 hours later, my doctor told me to come into his office, and he wouldn't even explain to me over the phone. And what he had found was my right coronary artery was 99% blocked. And I had not had a heart attack simply because I had formed, because I had exercised so much from my life, walking and doing all the things I was doing, I had formed collateral arteries that basically did a natural bypass of, you know, of the RCA. And I kind of equate that to, you know, blood. Anybody that's ever had a big gulp with one of those giant straws, that's your arteries. And I was drinking, basically getting blood through a cocktail straw. It was enough to keep my heart alive and keep it from having any damage to it. But I went in and ultimately had to have four stents. So I have four stents. I have two in my RCA, one in a ramus artery, I think, and one in a circumflex artery. So I have four arteries that have been stented. And that was almost 4 years ago. And, I've been taking 6 pills a day for 4 years, and it's just, it's been very difficult, and it's made it difficult, particularly in the heat. You know, I have trouble in the heat with one of my medications, and I just have kind of struggled really since. And, I guess, you know, I'm just happy to be on this planet, you know, with all the things that have happened. You think about Jason Bone, what happened to him after the Honda a couple of years ago. Robert Gomez had bypass surgery. Fortunately for me, these stents have held and I haven't had to have that. But every day I take those pills, I think about, golly, I hope they work. I hope they don't stop working, because I'm enjoying life and enjoying my family and enjoying playing golf. And I just hope that it doesn't just come to an end one day. So, you know, I kind of live in fear every day for some reason.
Well, looking back at your career, and obviously, you know, the whole golf industry, everyone hopes you're healthy and wants to see you on the Champions Tour playing great. So we're all hoping for you from that standpoint and pulling for you. But looking back at your career, it's a pretty damn good run. I mean, you almost played in 400 PGA Tour events. You're out there a long time. Looking back, how satisfied are you with it overall? Not, you know, the Champions Tour is your next level. So let's just looking at your PGA Tour career. How satisfied are you with it?
I don't know. Not very. You know, like, as I told you, there's a lot of regrets. I wish I would have maybe kind of incorporated some sports psychology, if you will, into my training regimen, besides just working on my golf swing. I got so caught up in the golf swing, the actual playing of the game, that I just completely discounted the great things that can be accomplished by a strong mind, I think, if for lack of a better term. I didn't utilize that. Not that I thought that it was kind of, you know, hocus pocus or anything like that. I just wish I would have incorporated more. We all want to go back and say, God, if I only knew, then what I know now, type of thing. You can't do that. But that is certainly one of my regrets. You know, everybody, I think just being out there for as long as I was, and look, I'm eventually going to reach the 400 event. I don't know when it's going to be, but, you know, I want to, you know, not that I'm looking for a number, but there's just, I look back, I mean, I had a good career. I mean, could you ask somebody that's getting up on the PGA Tour, would you like to have had Sean's finishes? Now, the money's a lot more now, so the guys would have more money than me. But would you like to have that career? Maybe some would say no. I would say the majority would say no. But the experiences that I've had, I think if people really kind of saw the whole story, I think they would love to experience kind of what I've experienced. I still don't look at it quite yet as past tense, because I'm still playing, and at some point maybe I'll take a long, hard look at the question you just asked me. But just as a quick answer, I'm not real satisfied, and I don't have a whole lot. Whole lot of reasons. I mean, we all want to win. I mean, I wanted to win more tournaments. I've been asked, would you rather have had 5 PGA Tour wins versus 1 major? And of course I can't do that. I mean, it's all hypothetical. I don't like hypothetical type questions, but to try to give an answer, I mean, I guess I would say, yeah. I mean, my whole career, when I first got started playing golf and I decided that's what I wanted to do, I wanted to be a PGA Tour player, which means that I wanted to do it for a living. And in order to do it for a living, you got to be out there. You got to be out there every year. So I almost think that if I had just had 5 wins but I would have had a 15 to 18 or 20 year straight career, I think it'd be a lot easier to answer questions as to why haven't you won a major versus why have you won a major and never won anything else? Because I can tell you that Lee Westwood and some of these other guys, Steve Stricker, and there's a lot of guys that have won so many tournaments and have Hall of Fame careers that never won a major, they hurt because of that. But I can tell you, I hurt just as much, and I have won. Why, you know, I get tired of answering questions, you know, why did you never win another tournament? Or it was luck, or you're a one-hit wonder. I mean, the articles, I got into it last year with Alan Shipnuck in the locker room, which is, which was famously noted on Twitter all of last year. I mean, I think I just got so tired of answering these types of questions that in some respects, I just kind of wish people would just write me off and just forget about me and let me move on to the Champions Tour. And if I do some good things out there, great. But there's just so many things that happened to me that the negativity that I've just kind of gotten tired of.
So this is really interesting. As I was putting this outline together to do this, the podcast and the interview, one of the guys who we run Sub 70 Golf with, we actually asked ourselves the question, which is so ironic that you brought it up, that would you rather have one major championship or, say, five wins? And that was literally the number we came up with.
That's funny.
Yeah, literally, an hour and a half ago, you know, we were going over our notes, making sure I got everything in order. And we both agreed, and I'm not just saying this because you're on with us, we would take the one major. We would take the one major in a millisecond because of the importance of major championships in the history of golf. So it's so interesting that you've thought about or had that same question asked to you. And we were sort of saying, you know, how do you look at it? Would you rather have X or Y? And we both looked at each other, just kind of writing our notes down, saying, we'd take the one major in a millisecond.
Yeah, but just be prepared to be labeled as the person that's the worst player to ever win a major. I mean, that's the label that I you know, that really kind of set me off, I think, with what happened last August. And so, again, getting back to my career, I wanted to be a consistent player. I wanted to win, and I knew I was going to win. But I wanted to win multiple times, but I wanted a long career. I wanted to be exempt for a long time. That's what I wanted to do for a living. I didn't want to just win one tournament and make a little bit of money and have historical significance, and then I basically become a nobody. I mean, I just, but it's, you know, I think being labeled as the worst player to have ever won a major championship has been, is not something that I would have sought when I was starting my career. It's been hard to live with, I think.
Well, the cool part is getting on the Champions Tour, you're also going to get an opportunity to show that this was not just a one-time thing, right? I mean, there is an opportunity to go out there thinking like what, Bruce Fletcher, right, in his heyday on the Champions Tour. Boy, did he put a cap on the second part of his career of showing that talent was there, and he won, what, 15, 16 times or 14 times?
It was really
good. So it's going to be exciting to see you kind of come out there and you know, kind of like what Colin Montgomery did by putting the exclamation points on, you know, three of them. The game's there to do it, so I think you got to be motivated.
And last year I had a really tough time, and you know, we've talked about cancer, and I lost my dad to cancer last year, in December 21st, 2016. So last year was a difficult year for just mentally, emotionally, trying to be the executor of my father's estate. You know, with my mom being gone, my sister lives in Madagascar, so there are a lot of things that have kind of taken me away from, I think, the focus of golf. You know, and that's okay. I'm in a much better place now. Even though my game, I feel like I'm playing well. I've missed two cuts, one by one, one by two, against these web.com kids who are really, really talented. So I feel like my game is there, but I'm not so quick to look forward. I mean, I'm looking forward to next year. I really am, for a lot of reasons. But while I'm still here and trying to compete, I still would like to try to challenge myself to play well enough to maybe win a tournament, maybe get into the top, you know, get into the playoffs, and maybe I could get my PGA Tour card back. I mean, that's actually the goal that I have for myself this year. Last year, I was just trying to play. I was like, oh, I got to play. My dad wants me to play. And when I got into the summer, I started focusing. I started playing a little bit better. But you know, I don't have an agenda. I don't have anything really left to prove. I tried to prove myself, and I failed. And I worked myself so hard that I would say I lost some friendships. There were parts of me where I wasn't probably a great husband, a great dad, because I devoted all my time to trying to figure out how to get back to that major championship level. I mean, I just basically got rid of everything and just sat my happy butt on the range, and that's all I did. So I don't look as the Champions Tour as any type of maybe redemption might be a good word to use. But again, I look forward to getting back on to playing golf with guys my own age, guys that I grew up playing with in the late 90s and the 2000s, and just being around those guys. I've been there and done that, if you will. Not that I don't want to experience the PGA Tour anymore. It's just changed so much in so many ways that I don't enjoy that type of game anymore.
No, I think if you got your card at almost 50 years old, that would be a hell of an accomplishment. It should be a goal you look forward to. I mean, that would be going into the Champions Tour, being exempt on the PGA Tour. That would be some momentum in the right direction that you know you're playing some quality golf. And then if you're playing quality golf in your late 40s like that, from what I've seen of watching those guys go into the Champions Tour, they do well. If you're competing at, yeah, I mean, that would be a great goal, and I hope you get there. Well, my next series is, we kind of asked the same questions to the guys we've interviewed, and they're kind of quick answers. Some that I came up that I thought would be interesting is for you to give your quick impressions of these players. They're kind of your era or generation, guys you compete against, and just give me your quick sort of 30-second thoughts on each one of them. So I'm going to go through my list here. No right or wrong answer. Ernie Els.
Wow. Really impressive. Major championship qualities about him with the length, the touch around the greens. I mean, he certainly lost some of that over the years, as we all do. But just a incredible. I mean, he was built, I think, for major championship golf.
Phil Mickelson.
Wow, unbelievably talented. I always questioned whether or not his aggressive style was something that was going to suit the PGA Tour for a long time, and he certainly proved me wrong. And he's great with the fans. I would say almost Arnold Palmer-esque in that way.
Tiger Woods.
The best player I've ever played with. Can argue that he's probably the best player of all time, but you can't discount the 18 majors that Jack has. But I was blessed to have played with him in his prime, and I look forward to watching his comeback, and I hope that these young kids get to see him at least for a brief moment in what I got to see.
Jim Furyk.
Consistent. He and I were in the playoff together in 1993 at the Tour School. I birdied the first two holes, and I think he went birdie par, so it was my one and only time to beat him. Great player, consistent player, someone that I wanted to mold my game after as far as tournament and longevity, just a consistent player.
Vijay Singh.
I played with Vijay in Macau in 1998, and I was in awe of him, of his size, his work ethic, his attitude. I mean, he's very rough around the edges once you get to know him. He'd come up and give you a hug, I think, if you asked him. He just impressive. He's had a great career, an unbelievable drive to succeed.
John Daly.
Oh, I lost money to John when I was when I was 19 years old. I lost $500 to John on my home course. That's for another story, I guess. But unbelievably gifted. I mean, the talent is limitless, really, with John. I think John just got kind of. He got taken astray a little bit with some of the things that happened to him along the way, but unbelievably talented. And probably if you asked any of the guys out there, including Tiger Woods, John might have the best set of hands that's ever lived.
Retief Goosen.
Played a little bit with Retief and heard a lot about him when I was in South Africa. I'll never forget the major championship that he won at Southern Hills when he missed that short putt. But his career, he's got one at Shinnecock in the U.S. Open in 2004. And just unbelievably straight driver, very quiet, which was surprising to me. Didn't have a whole lot to say, but I'd like to have his game.
And my final one here for you is Mike Weir.
Oh, Mike and I got to know each other a little bit. That was the year of 2003 when we all won our major championships, the four of us. I'm sitting here looking at this picture right now from a flag that we all signed at the Grand Slam of Golf. And, that Masters will go down in history for me because I remember seeing he was battling, I believe, Lynn Matisse, who very well could have deserved to have won that tournament. But Mike had the determination, was an unbelievably great putter. And injuries kind of got the best of him too. But I think you'll look forward to seeing him on the Champions Tour.
So let me ask you about Memphis. I absolutely love the town. Being in the golf business, I get down there every couple of years to see my buddies over at True Temper. And
yeah.
If you're going to go to Memphis, for the people listening, what couple golf courses would you suggest to play? They could be private or public. And then if you are going to go out for dinner, where's the best Memphis barbecue at, in your opinion?
Oh, gosh. Okay, well, got to go to the Rendezvous. The Rendezvous, and there's everybody has different styles of taste, you know, for barbecue. Barbecue, or the Rendezvous is known for their dry rub. You know, the Virgus family, they're really good friends of mine. They actually did my champions dinner in 2004 at Whistling Straits. But look, my home club, Ridgeway Country Club, very centrally located. It's a fun golf course to play. Never gets old. There's so many. I mean, Colonial, you got to go see Colonial Country Club. I mean, for anybody that's ever been there, the golf course, the link is pretty much the same. I think they've added a tier or two here or there. But to see and actually play the golf course and to try to digest how Guy Berger shot 59 on there is definitely a place to see. You know, Memphis Country Club is it's hard to get on, but it's a beautiful place too. But I stick out here at my club at Ridgeway Country Club. But there's TPC Southwind obviously is a host of the tournament. And it's tough, but if you come out, I would say, you know, you need to go out to Colonial and see where Al shot his 59.
If you could take three PGA Tour players, or they could be Champion Tour players, for a day out of golf, maybe a little fun money game, and grabbing dinner and a few drinks afterwards, which three guys are you taking? What course are you playing, and why are you taking these three guys?
Oh, God. Oh, well, I mean, you know, look, I mean, I think I'm not a huge historian on the game of golf, but I have an overwhelming appreciation for where the game got started. I mean, I would love, you know, of course you got to have Tiger Woods, I would love to have, you know, John Daly for the stories and, you know, probably, you know, Jack Nicklaus, I think just for his tremendous accomplishments and because I know him pretty well. And, oh God, where would we play? I mean, I guess we're going to go to Oak Hill. We're going to take them out to Oak Hill. We're going to play an old Donald Ross course and kind of relive some memories. I don't know too many restaurants because back in, you know, when I won there in 03, I pretty much had room service. I was too afraid to go out, you know, with all the stuff that was going on. But, there's so many guys you could mention in that question. But I think just, you know, Tiger Woods, being around him, you know, playing with him in kind of my era is the best player I've ever played with. Just the things that he was able to accomplish and things he could do with a golf ball, it just kind of made you shake your head. You know, but I don't know. I mean, I wish I could throw my dad in there. My dad was never a PGA player, so I can't get him in there, but I owe so much to him that he's always at the top of any list for me to play golf with.
I'm totally fine with making it a five. You know, you won a major there. You can take five out. I don't think anyone's going to complain at Oak Hill. So let's just call that the five-some. I always ask people the best golf shot you ever hit under pressure. So I can't ask you that one because I think we all know that 7-iron was pretty damn good. So the second best golf shot you ever hit under pressure on the PGA Tour.
Okay, that's pretty easy. On Father's Day Sunday, 2010, I was playing pretty good. I actually was tied for the lead after the first 27 holes and then had a little thing happen to me on the first hole of the second day. But on Father's Day Sunday, I'm playing with Vijay Singh, and number six, the par five. I had 230 to the front and 9 to the pin, so I had 239 to a front right pin, pulled out a 3-iron, and hold it for double eagle. And I think Nick Watney made one at the Olympic Club a few years ago with a 7-iron. But outside of that, it was me, T.C. Chen, and Nick Watney are the only three people to ever make a double eagle in the U.S. Open. So that's a pretty easy one to come up with.
Best golf shot you ever saw by a competitor that you were playing against in the PGA Tour, guy in your same group who pulled off a shot that you just couldn't believe for how good it was?
Oh. I've seen so many. Oh man, I'm trying to think of one that comes to mind quickly. I don't know. You might have to give me a pass on that one for a second, see if I can't mentally kind of run through that.
We just got a couple left, so we'll circle back to that one if you can think of it. So there's got to be some good ones you've seen. So we'll take a timeout on that one. Most just raw talent of a golfer that you played with that you've ever seen on the PGA Tour, who just has absolutely the most raw talent.
Well, I mean, it's easy to look at Tiger Woods, but I mean, I would as much as I've played with him, I would say Kenny Perry. Kenny Perry is probably one of the best ball. He and Chad Campbell are right up there with ball striking, and I would say Kenny. The sound that the ball made coming off of Kenny's, not only his driver, because he's a big guy, he's got some speed and strength, but just the way that he kind of hit every shot. It was also some of the most consistent ball flight of anyone I've ever seen. This high draw. I mean, it's easy to see why Kenny, you know, won 30-something million on the PGA Tour. Most people don't even realize that. But I'd have to say that, and there have been so many that I've played with. But as far as just top to bottom, I mean, just the ability to hit shots. I mean, I would say Kenny's right up there. You know, I mean, Tiger is always going to be there because he just amazed everybody with his shot making, his ability to get out of trouble. I mean, the short game that he had under pressure was just phenomenal. But as far as somebody that I played with regularly, I mean, it has to be KP.
Best three golf courses in the world, and what makes them so special?
Oh, wow. Well, Oak Hills, obviously, is going to be there. You know, I just love, like I said earlier, I love the tree line. I love the tree line golf courses. I love the old clubhouse. I love the practice facility. I love the elevation changes that they have, the way that the fairways kind of meandered around the property. But, you know, you've got, I mean, so many. I mean, Carnoustie I loved. Oakmont's another one. And I guess that's three. But, I mean, there are so many. I used to love Firestone. I mean, you know, the golf course has changed a lot with the technology. But, you know, Augusta is going to be there. Shinnecock, I mean, Oak Hill, Oakmont. I mean, all those great courses.
Yeah, it's hard to pick just three for what you've seen. It totally makes sense to me. Each has their own uniqueness to it.
Yeah, and you think, too, I've played in so many different golf courses. I mean, I've played in so many different countries that I've seen the best in every country, it seems like, that I've played in. So, hard to pick.
Also, I know you've given back to a lot charity-wise with St. Jude's and the Make-A-Wish Foundation, then obviously with your dad's situation with glioblastoma. How important or special has that been to you? And I'm assuming you get a lot back out of it as well as working with those charities.
Yeah. I mean, after I won the PGA, it was absolutely perfect timing. John Daly had left the Make-A-Wish Foundation to start his own charitable group called the Lion's Heart Foundation. And I did the Make-A-Wish, the Sean McKeel Make-A-Wish Golf Classic. Stephanie and I did that for 14 years. And, I stopped doing it last year after my dad died. I just had kind of lost the energy, I think. But you know, we raised a lot of money for those children, these sick children, these wishes, and just the ability to see the smiles on their faces and everything else is why, you know, I kind of was surrounded with them. But as far as, you know, the glioblastoma thing and, you know, my mom died of lung cancer, my dad with the brain cancer, I hadn't been as active with them. I used to wear a gray ribbon when my dad was sick. I wore a gray ribbon, you know, on my hat and on my shirt collar for a while. And I just hadn't really been able to kind of mount anything, you know, for him. And I'm supportive of all the charities. If people ask me to donate something, I'm there. I mean, what better way to give back to people that are suffering than to, you know, with your time or a phone call or a visit or something else. And fortunately, Stephanie and I were able to raise a lot of money for our local organization here in Memphis, but I mean, they're all worthwhile and they're all worth giving to.
Well, we also put on Twitter that we're going to be doing the podcast with you, and Bobby Clampett, who we interviewed a couple weeks ago, had a question for you, if I can ask that.
Oh,
and
yeah.
It's quote unquote, how does having a recreational activity like flying airplanes affect your golf game?
Oh, what a question. I don't know. Yeah. I think it's the mental side of things. In an airplane that's traveling, whatever, you know, whatever speed, I mean, you're always having to think ahead. And I think in golf, they try to stay you know, somewhat in the present, but you still always have to kind of be thinking about what's out in front of you. You know, flying an airplane is an absolute joy. It's not easy to do, but it's, I mean, I love flying more than I love playing golf, but I think you just have to be mentally strong. You have to be ready for your next challenge. Things don't always go smoothly. Sometimes, you know, you hit one deep in the woods, you got to have a quick pitch out. Sometimes, you know, you may have a, you're always thinking about the next engine failure. You know, what are you doing on takeoff? I mean, what am I going to do? How am I going to respond to this thing that may be, you know, affecting, you know, my life? Whereas in golf, it's not, you know, it's not life and death, but it's, they kind of mirror each other. There's always problems. You're always thinking about that. And, you know, you're just trying to prepare for things that that may kind of come your way, and you have to be ready to handle each situation, and they're all different.
Well, I don't have any other questions except did the one golf shot that you saw somebody else hit, has it hit your mind yet of what that shot is?
Oh gosh!
Or we can save it till next time.
I don't know. We may have to save it for the next time. I mean, I have seen so many. I mean, I remember. I don't know. I guess one that stands out, because I was talking about with somebody the other day, they were asking me about Tiger, and particularly since he was coming back at Torrey Pines. And it was the year that I played with him in the final round. And it was, could have been 2000 or 2001. And I hit it down. I was so nervous. I mean, I can't even imagine, you know, what people were thinking about lowly Sean McKeel playing with Tiger Woods. You know, I was pretty much invisible. But since I was out there, I had to hit a shot. So on the first hole, I hit it out, you know, hit a good drive down the middle of the fairway. And Tiger gets up, and he snap hooks it left. And I think that's the ninth hole. I think the ninth hole might be the eighth hole that comes back. Anyway, he's over there. I mean, he's 50, 60 yards left of where I am in the middle of the fairway, and he's away. And he comes out. It turned out to be a four iron that he hit, because I asked him. But he hit this punch hook four iron to a back left pin on number one on Sunday to about, I don't know, 4 feet. And then I get on and hit whatever shot I hit, six iron or something like that, 30 feet. I mean, that's one that stands out. And I think simply just because I was talking about it the other day, but I just, whenever you would hit something like that, you could see him. He smiled. I mean, you would look at him and shake your head, and he would just kind of give you that big, you know, that big, big smile. And you never did ask him how he hit it, because he wasn't going to tell you.
Well, thank you so much for your time. I greatly appreciate it. Went a little longer than we thought it would be, but I can't thank you enough. Your insight was tremendous, and truly enjoyed the conversation that we had. So thank you very much, Sean, for being on. I appreciate it.
Yeah, I appreciate you, you know, giving me the opportunity to kind of share my story.